GSF 90.1 FM, जो कि बर्नबी ब्रिटिश कोलंबिया में स्थित है.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! War, Peace, and the Presidency. On Tuesday, November 5th, I'll be joined by Juan Gonzalez, Nermeen Sheikh, and guests from around the country for a live election night special. I hope you'll tune in at democracynow.org from 8 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for our one-of-a-kind reporting and analysis on this critical election. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. I'm going to protect them.
He does not believe women should have the agency and authority to make decisions about their own bodies.
Kamala Harris blasts Donald Trump for vowing to protect women whether they like it or not. At the same time, he calls for Republican Liz Cheney to be shot in the face. We'll get response from the nation's Amy Littlefield and talk about 10 states with abortion rights on the ballot. We'll also look at House and Senate races across the country with journalist John Nichols in Wisconsin, including the red state of Nebraska, where independent candidate, UAW-backed labor activist Dan Osborne could oust his Republican opponent. And what's that little secret between Trump and Johnson?
We got to get the congressman elected, and we got to get the senators elected, because we can take the Senate pretty easily. And I think with our little secret, we're going to do really well with the House, right? Our little secret is having a big impact. He and I have a secret. We'll tell you what it is when the race is over.
We'll speak with Ellie Mistel about how House Speaker Mike Johnson could help install Trump as president through a contingent election in which the House, not the Electoral College, determines the president. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 95 Palestinians since Thursday morning, as Israel intensifies its attacks on Deir al-Balah and the Nusayrat refugee camp in northern Gaza. The Associated Press has revealed a shocking story about a Palestinian ambulance worker who is transporting a corpse wrapped in a bloody sheet. Once he arrived at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, he learned the body was of his own mother, who'd been killed in an Israeli airstrike. Meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders has confirmed one of its own orthopedic surgeons, Dr. Mohammed Obaid, has been detained by Israeli forces along with other medical staff at Kamal Adwan Hospital. In the occupied West Bank, the death toll from an Israeli raid on the Nur Shams refugee camp has risen to at least five. Israeli troops destroyed roads, water infrastructure, and a health clinic run by UNRWA, the UN refugee organization. UNRWA said their office was a hub to deliver services to 14,000 Palestinian refugees in the camp. Israeli forces also reportedly detained and beat a number of Palestinians during the deadly raid. One Palestinian, named Osama Shaheen, said Israeli troops wrote numbers on the forehead of each prisoner.
At the time of dawn prayers exactly, they raided the house. They broke down the door and damaged everything in the house. Nothing was left in the house. I was beaten from the moment I left the house to when we went to Majnune. They brought me back here, all sorts of beatings, all sorts of beatings, on my chest, on my head. It was severe. Each one got a number on his forehead, and in the army jeep, everyone there hits you. Everyone hits you. Most of the beating is to the head, mostly to the head.
The Washington Post's reporting, Israel's bombing campaign in southern Lebanon has now damaged or destroyed nearly 5,900 buildings near the Israeli border, about a quarter of all buildings in the area. Lebanon's Ministry of Health reported six medics were killed Thursday in Israel's ongoing attacks. Israel bombed the southern suburbs of Beirut overnight, destroying dozens of more buildings. Lebanon's Prime Minister Najib Mikati blasted Israel over the latest attack, saying it's a sign that Israel's rejecting efforts to secure a ceasefire. Meanwhile, Hezbollah responded with rocket attacks on northern Israel Thursday that killed seven people, including four agricultural workers from Thailand. In Britain, pro-Palestinian activists have called off protests targeting Barclays after the banking giant revealed it had sold its shares in Elbit Systems, Israel's largest weapons company. The British group Palestine Action had organized over 50 direct action protests targeting Barclays over the past year. In election news, Kamala Harris campaigned in Arizona Thursday and blasted Donald Trump for saying he's going to protect women, whether the women like it or not.
And this is not the first time he has told us who he is. He does not believe women should have the agency and authority to make decisions about their own bodies. This is the same man who said women should be punished for their choices. He simply does not respect the freedom of women or the intelligence of women to know what's in their own best interest and make decisions accordingly.
During Harris's speech in Phoenix, Arizona, she was repeatedly interrupted by pro-Palestinian protesters. Donald Trump was also in Arizona Thursday, where he campaigned with Tucker Carlson. Trump suggested former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney should face a firing squad. Cheney and her father, former Vice President Dick Cheney, have both backed Harris in the race.
And I don't blame him for sticking with his daughter, but his daughter is a very dumb individual, very dumb. She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face.
Liz Cheney responded by writing, quote, "This is how dictators destroy free nations. They threaten those who speak against them with death. We cannot entrust our country and our freedom to a petty, vindictive, cruel, unstable man who wants to be a tyrant," unquote. Donald Trump's heading to Dearborn, Michigan today, to the nation's largest Arab-majority city, where many former Biden voters have vowed not to back Harris over her support for Israel's war on Gaza. Harris has not yet campaigned in Dearborn. Earlier this week, former President Bill Clinton campaigned for Harris in Michigan and sparked outcry after he said Israel was being, quote, forced to kill civilians in Gaza.
Hamas makes sure that they're shielded by civilians. They'll force you to kill civilians if you want to defend yourself.
Spain has declared 3 days of national mourning after the death toll from devastating flash flooding soared to 158. Most of the deaths were in Valencia, where flooding uprooted trees, downed power lines, demolished bridges and roads, and left hundreds of cars strewn about like toys half buried in the mud. The disaster struck as unprecedented storms brought a year's worth of rainfall in just 8 hours.
Well, it's all destroyed. Shops, supermarkets, schools, cars, it's all destroyed. These caravans come from the 27th neighborhood, almost in Valencia. They went all the way down until here, and just here on the right, there's a boat. It has been incredible, mind-blowing.
Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez is warning devastation caused by flash flooding is not finished, as Spain's weather agency warned a fresh round of storms will bring more heavy rain today. Climate scientists warn human activity is driving global heating that makes extreme weather events more frequent and more destructive. Democracy Now! Will be in Baku, Azerbaijan, to cover the UN climate summit in a few weeks. Papua New Guinea's leaders have withdrawn from this month's COP29 UN climate summit after slamming pledges by the world's biggest polluters as empty talk. Foreign Minister Justin Klotchenko said, quote, "We will no longer tolerate empty promises and inaction while our people suffer the devastating consequences of climate change. If we must cut down our forests to sustain ourselves and develop our economy, so be it," unquote. Papua New Guinea says it'll instead seek to forge bilateral climate agreements with other nations. North Korea's foreign minister Cho Sun-hui is visiting Moscow as about 10,000 North Korean forces have arrived near Ukraine's border to fight alongside Russian troops. Meanwhile, North Korea test-fired an intercontinental ballistic missile Thursday, demonstrating its ability to launch nuclear attacks that could reach the mainland, the United States. Former Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has admitted under oath he oversaw a death squad of gangsters he used to target people while he served as mayor of the southern city of Davao. Duterte made the admission during testimony Monday to a Philippine Senate inquiry into widespread extrajudicial police and vigilante killings carried out under Duterte's so-called war on drugs.
Meron akong death squad.
I have a death squad. A death squad, seven of them. But they are the police. They were gangsters. I command one of the gangsters, kill that, because if you don't, I will kill you.
A United Nations report found at least 8,600 people were killed in the drug war unleashed by Duterte, with some estimates suggesting the true toll could be three times higher. The International Criminal Court in The Hague is investigating Duterte for possible crimes against humanity committed under his rule. Botswana's president has conceded defeat after his long-ruling Botswana Democratic Party lost its parliamentary majority for the first time since Botswana won its independence from Britain in 1966. The president, Mokgweetsi Masisi, had been seeking a second five-year term in Wednesday's election. Opposition leader Duma Boko of the Umbrella for Democratic Change Party is expected to become Botswana's new president. And in Brazil, two former police officers who confessed to assassinating Rio de Janeiro City Councilwoman Marielle Franco and her driver in 2018 were sentenced Thursday to long prison terms. Rani Lessa, who admitted to firing the fatal shots, was sentenced to nearly 79 years. Elcio de Queiroz, who drove the getaway car, received a nearly 60-year sentence. Following Thursday's verdict, Marielle's sister, the black activist, journalist, and educator Aniele Franco, spoke out. Since last year, she has served as Brazil's Minister of Racial Equality.
Since the beginning, we said we would not stop until justice was made. It was a lot of nights, days, years, taking care of my parents. Yesterday I said it, and today I repeat it. Marielle's biggest legacy to the country is the evidence that women, black people who live in slums, when they get to positions, they deserve to remain alive.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Just days away from Election Day, Kamala Harris campaigned in Arizona Thursday and blasted Donald Trump for saying he's going to protect women, quote, whether the women like it or not. Harris spoke from Phoenix just hours before Trump also made an appearance in Arizona as both candidates make a final push in battleground states.
And Donald Trump's not done. Did everyone hear what he just said yesterday? That he will do what he wants, quote, and here's where I'm going to quote, whether the women like it or not. And we must vote, because this is the thing. You know, there's a saying that you got to listen to people when they tell you who you are, who they are. And this is not the first time he has told us who he is. He does not believe women should have the agency and authority to make decisions about their own bodies. This is the same man who said women should be punished for their choices. He simply does not respect the freedom of women or the intelligence of women to know what's in their own best interest and make decisions accordingly.
Donald Trump was also in Arizona Thursday, where he campaigned with Tucker Carlson. Trump suggested former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney should face a firing squad. Cheney and her father, former Vice President Dick Cheney, have both backed Harris in the race.
And I don't blame him for sticking with his daughter, but his daughter is a very dumb individual, very dumb. She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with nine barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face.
This comes as voters in at least 10 states will decide on historic ballot measures that would enshrine abortion rights in their state constitutions, including in Arizona, Nevada, Florida, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Missouri, which is one of the nation's strictest abortion bans that went into effect after the conservative majority Supreme Court gutted Roe v. Wade in 2022. The Associated Press reports proponents of the abortion rights ballot measures have raised over $160 million, nearly six times more than what anti-abortion groups have fundraised to fight the initiatives. For more, we go to Boston, where we're joined by Amy Littlefield, independent journalist who covers reproductive health and abortion access at The Nation, where her latest piece is headlined, "Peering into the Minds of the Moderate White Women Who Might Just Save Us from Trump." Amy, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't we start off by talking about the violence? Let's start off by talking about what President Trump said about protecting women, whether they want it or not. And then this interview with Tucker Carlson said that Liz Cheney should be shot with barrels trained on her face.
I mean, Amy, I think I actually have a more generous interpretation of Trump's comments about, you know, protecting women, whether they like it or not, than many critics. I have to say, I think what Trump said from the stage is actually a very succinct and clear definition of patriarchy. I mean, feminist theorists couldn't have dreamed of putting it so succinctly and so clearly, right? He is laying out the bargain that white patriarchy has offered to white women in this country since the colonization of this country, right? It is so clear. He is saying, white women, we will protect you from brown and black men, right? That was the context of that quote. It was about, we're going to protect women from at the border. We're going to protect women in suburbs and cities and farms from this imagined threat of black and brown men who are coming to get them, right? And all we demand in exchange for that protection is your submission. That's been the bargain of patriarchy, right? And it's coming at a time, of course, when women's rights have been vaporized and the Supreme Court, thanks to Donald Trump, has overturned Roe v. Wade. And so, you know, to me, again, I think gender theorists should be studying this quote because it is such a distilled expression of exactly what patriarchy is and exactly what the racist bargain that it has offered to white women throughout our country's history is, right? And so I think for me, the defining question of this election is whether white women, who are the largest voting bloc in this country, 38% of voters in this country are white women, and they have gone for Donald Trump over the Democratic candidate in the last two presidential elections. And to me, the defining question of this election, which is the first since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, is whether white women are going to punish the man who took away their rights and say no to this racist bargain that the Republican Party is offering them. And that's what I'll be watching on Election Day.
And we're going to talk about those abortion initiatives around the country and how they got on the how they got there to begin with, the grassroots movements. But I wanted to stick for a moment with this issue of Trump calling for Liz Cheney to be shot with guns trained on her face. This week, also, Fox News commentator Jesse Waters threatened to divorce his wife, Emma, if he found out she voted for Kamala Harris.
And if I found out Emma was going into the voting booth and pulling the lever for Harris, that's the same thing as having an affair. That to me.
Oh my God. Let him finish. Judge, that violates
the sanctity of our marriage.
Preach on, yes.
What else is she keeping from me?
Exactly.
What else is she lying about?
Why would she lie to you? Have you threatened her? Why would she lie to you?
Oh, they want me to tease.
Why would she do that and then vote Harris? Why would she say she was voting Trump and then voting Harris? And I caught her, and then she said, I lied to you for the last 4 years.
So you admit you intimidated.
It's over, Emma. That would be D-Day.
So that's Jesse Waters on Fox. In fact, it was Liz Cheney who told women across the country, don't tell your husbands that you're going to vote for Kamala Harris. But, you know, you've got the privacy of the polling booth.
Amy, I'm a little mad at you for playing those two clips at me back to back when I don't have a bucket here to vomit in. But I just want to say off the bat, I mean, this is the same Jesse Waters who, in fact, did have an affair and cheat on his wife, and she divorced him over that. So I don't know. There's something deeply psychological going on here. But on a more serious note, Amy, I mean, this is something Kylie Chung talks about in her book, Survivor Injustice. There is a phenomenon in this country that we don't know the scope of, which is people who are in abusive relationships whose husbands or abusive partners control the way that they vote. That is a thing. Now, I don't mean to imply that Jesse Waters is in that situation. I don't know the details of his marriage, nor do I want to. But I do think that on a more serious note, this is a real phenomenon, that there are women out there who we know are hiding the way that they're voting from their husbands, right? And we've seen ads about this. We've seen clear statements about it. We've seen women putting stickers in bathroom stalls saying your vote is private. You know, you can vote for Harris no matter what your husband says. And I think what this taps into is a very real phenomenon, which is there is domestic violence-induced voter suppression in this country. You know, Kylie talked to women who said their abusive partners were controlling the way that they voted. And so this is a very real and serious thing. And, you know, I can remember being out knocking door or observing while canvassers were knocking doors in Kansas when abortion was on the ballot there. And, you know, women answering the door talking about, you know, who were registered Republican, talking about their experiences with IVF and their experiences with reproductive freedom. And so these experiences, especially in the wake of the overturn of Roe v. Wade, might cause women to break with their husbands and to vote for the first black woman president.
Amy Littlefield, let's talk about the abortion ballot initiatives that are in 10 states right now. Begin with Florida and DeSantis on Amendment 4, trying to prevent those who support this ballot initiative from running ads.
I mean, Florida is by far the most high-stakes state where abortion is on the ballot this year. We have abortion on the ballot in 10 states. That's a record for a U.S. election. Florida is a haven state for abortion access in the South, or was until the six-week ban went into effect there. 84,000 abortions in that state before, you know, these restrictions. And so it's crucial to restore abortion access there. We've seen over $100 million raised in this state with this huge momentum behind this campaign to restore abortion access in Florida. And it's obviously terrifying Ron DeSantis, because he's been threatening criminal charges against TV stations for airing ads in favor of the pro-choice amendment, prompting a judge to say it's the First Amendment, stupid. And he's deployed election police to question people who signed the signature, you know, signed the petition to get this amendment on the ballot. So he's used state resources to fight this. We're really seeing Ron DeSantis pulling out all the stops there. At the same time, we're seeing this campaign that knows Republican voters outnumber Democrats in the state by a million. And this is a state that has a very high threshold, 60%, to get an initiative passed. And so there's a huge amount of effort that has to go into persuading Republican and independent voters if this is going to pass. And so what we've seen, you know, I got a hold of some of the internal guidance that the campaign is using. They talk about, you know, don't emphasize DeSantis and Trump. Don't talk about the Republican politicians. Talk about extremist politicians behind this ban, right? They talk about not emphasizing travel stories, but instead emphasizing cases where people's lives were at risk or where there was sexual abuse that caused a pregnancy. And so we're seeing a real attempt to sort of modulate the campaigns in states like Florida to sort of tone it to a moderate frequency to hit voters who are Republican or independent and who may very well be voting for Trump and also voting in favor of abortion rights.
An investigation by ProPublica finds at least two people in Texas died after they were denied reproductive health care due to Texas's abortion ban, which bars doctors from ending the heartbeat of a fetus, even when a pregnancy is non-viable and the life of a pregnant person is at risk. In one case, 28-year-old Giselle Barnica was admitted to a Houston hospital as she began to suffer a miscarriage 17 weeks into her pregnancy. For 40 hours, doctors denied her a simple and urgently needed medical procedure to empty her uterus, which would have prevented the infection that ultimately killed her. She died 3 days after her miscarriage. Can you talk about that report?
Amy, these are just tragic stories, and they keep on coming. this story about Hiseli Barnica, who is in a hospital, you know, in pain, suffering for 40 hours, praying that she, you know, be able to return home to her young daughter, and she died. Right. And ProPublica has done such a good job laying out how the anti-abortion laws in Texas have led to such confusion and fear among medical providers. The story that they published this morning on Nevaeh Crane, this was an 18-year-old girl who suffers a miscarriage starting on the day of her baby shower. Her mother brings her in to the hospital. She visits three different times and is denied care, delayed, turned away. And eventually dies after the final hospital that she goes to makes her undergo two sonograms to confirm fetal demise. Now, I want to say something that I think ProPublica missed in this story that published today that is hugely important. The hospital where Nevaeh Crane died was a Catholic hospital. It was a Christus facility, which is a Catholic healthcare chain. And Amy, we've spoken before on the show about how Catholic hospitals operate under Catholic religious rules issued by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops that prohibit doctors from performing abortions. This was true before the Dobbs decision. And unfortunately, ProPublica neglected to mention that in their article. And so while I think it's very important to highlight the anti-abortion laws in Texas, which were are some of the strictest in the country, and the chilling effect that those laws have on people in life-saving emergencies, it's also important to note that this was far from a perfect system before the Dobbs decision and before these laws went into effect in Texas, and that we had religious hospitals, including Catholic facilities like Texas, that were turning women away in these life-threatening emergencies. And in fact, I and others were doing that reporting before the Dobbs decision. And so we really need to look at the sort of compounding levels in our healthcare system that have all failed women.
And finally, if you can talk about Arizona, how activists got this again on the ballot and how critical this is, because if people perhaps are not going to the polls to vote for president, but they go to the polls because they want to ensure reproductive health care and access, since they're there, they're going to vote for president. And the question is, will they vote for the one who's against abortion or for abortion? President Trump says if he's president, women will stop thinking about abortion.
Oh, right. Another beautiful patriarchal fantasy foisted upon us. I mean, Arizona, I remember sitting here, Amy, talking to you about Arizona and how they were sending us back to the 19th century, right, with their Civil War era abortion ban. And of course, you know, while that's not in effect anymore, it galvanized the state over the issue of abortion there. And so there's been tremendous momentum in states like Arizona, activist groups, organizers, people who have mobilized over this issue, getting this on the ballot. Arizona and Nevada, both swing states, both places where abortion is directly on the ballot. And I think another defining question of this election is whether these ballot initiatives, and again, we know ballot initiatives on abortion are popular. All seven times abortion's been on the ballot since Dobbs, it has won. And so I think the question is really whether that popularity of abortion rights extends to Democratic politicians up and down the ballot in these swing states.
Amy Littlefield, I want to thank you for being with us, abortion access correspondent at The Nation, independent journalist who covers reproductive health. 10 states, Montana, Maryland, Colorado, New York, Nebraska, Florida, Missouri, South Dakota, Nevada, and Arizona will have abortion on the ballot. And for many, they've already voted because so many people have voted so far. We'll link to your latest piece, Amy, peering into the minds of the moderate white women who might just save us from Trump. Next up, we look at House and Senate races across the country with journalist John Nichols in Wisconsin. Stay with us.
Turn up.
secure. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to the battleground state of Wisconsin, where both presidential candidates are spending a lot of time. Donald Trump and Kamala Harris held competing rallies in the state Wednesday and returned tonight for two more rallies just miles apart from each other in Milwaukee. On Wednesday in Green Bay, Trump posed in a garbage truck on the airport tarmac amidst Republican criticism of recent comments by President Biden about Trump supporters while responding to a far-right so-called comedian at Trump's weekend rally at Madison Square Garden who called Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage.
How do you like my garbage truck? This truck is in honor of Kamala and Joe Biden.
Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris